Hi, and welcome to the Conservative Roots Podcast. Today is March 10th, 2022. I'm your host, Robert. Good to be back and talking with you. I know it's been a long while, and a lot has happened since the last time we did a podcast, but the news is still basically the same. Russia and Ukraine and energy, those are the two things that we're going to focus on today. When I talked to you guys the last time, I was a little bit skeptical, well, a lot skeptical about the mainstream news narrative about the Ukraine-Russia war. I was a little bit anxious to see so many people immediately following the mainstream narrative about this was 100% Russia's fault, building up Ukraine into nothing but heroes, especially since we have evidence and the Ukraine has long been linked to all of the people that we don't like as conservatives. They have been massively linked to the Obamas, the Clintons, the Biden family, basically anybody that you want to call the deep state. They've been a money laundering center for the world. And so we know, just based on common sense, this was not the good guys versus the bad guys. This is, at best, the bad guys versus the bad guys. And I don't really care, or let's put it this way, I don't need to understand 100% what the truth is right now, because I know that that is going to be clouded in the fog of war, and I know the media is going to manipulate people and everything else. But what I don't like to see, or I didn't like to see back then, and it's still happening now, is so many people being manipulated, right? Something wasn't right about it. And I said we needed to wait to see the real truth. We needed to take a step back. We needed to wait until the fog of war lifts, because anytime that a war starts, you're going to get nothing but propaganda from both sides. And what frightened me about it was this massive media blitz. It was like the same kind of media blitz that we saw with the Russia hoax against Donald Trump, against his entire presidency, with the Mueller report, the massive media blitz that we saw with COVID. And the thing with all of those news stories was, is you weren't allowed to have a dissenting opinion. Now, we've had a lot of wars in, you know, the last two decades that we've gotten involved with. And I've never once in my life seen the media take the side so quickly and so vehemently of a country before. Now, you know, granted, most of the wars that the media has covered, we've been a part of. We've had an active role in it. So you would expect that they're, of course, going to be on our side. But I've never seen anything like this where any kind of a conflict that happened outside of our borders, where the entire world media just jumped on it and tried to get you to hate one side and love another so much. And I have to think that that has to do with the fact that the media is aligned with the very people who are involved in the corruption of the Ukraine. It was like a media groupthink nonstop. I mean, you know, most of the country, you know, and when I say most of the country, the United States, but really, if you think about it, most of the world probably didn't know much about the Ukraine before, didn't consider them, didn't think about them. And all of a sudden, these people are absolute heroes. You have companies all around the world trying to completely isolate Russia now, you know, Visa, MasterCard, the SWIFT payment program. All of these major U.S. corporations, you know, the soft drinks, you know, Coke and Pepsi and Starbucks, Netflix canceled service. And most of these let's call them punishments or whatever, are not affecting the Russian government. They're affecting the Russian people themselves. Now, you know, before, it's the same kind of thing. When I said that the Ukraine was as guilty or also bad, I'm not talking about the people. Obviously, nobody likes war. Nobody likes any kind of war. Even the most honorable war is absolutely horrific to the common citizen. You can have the best reason to go to war. Look at World War II, you know, stopping the Nazis. Okay, absolutely an honorable thing to do to go and stop Hitler. The problem is that that entails common, regular, innocent people dying. And it's the same kind of thing here. So it doesn't matter whether this war was justified or not. War in and of itself is a horrific thing to do. So I don't have any kind of love for Russia for, you know, for invading. But I'm wondering why the punishment of the common Russian person. If we can look at this conflict and we can say that the average Ukrainian citizen is innocent, you know, wouldn't logic prevail and say that the average Russian citizen is also innocent? So what you're seeing really is, I think, that same Lindsey Graham style pressure where they want Putin to be removed, and they think putting pressure on the common Russian person is going to turn everybody against Putin, and they want him taken out by his own people. That's what this really is. And it's like a cancel culture. You know, it's cancel culture on a mass scale. And I think that it's dangerous. This is the type of warfare that we're seeing in the 21st century. They don't necessarily need from America to fire missiles at Russia. We have sanctions which are hurting the economy. We have this. This type of cancel culture where you take away all of these global companies that do business in Russia and you shut off their internet services, you take away Netflix, you take away credit card processing, and it's like an isolation and a banishment. And this is the thing that's going to become more and more prevalent as we go on. This is the kind of thing where we saw in Canada where they just, you know, took people's bank accounts, took away their licenses for their trucks. This is the kind of thing that they do now. They don't have to come in and actually hit you with a club. They don't have to shoot you anymore. They can just turn off your life. And when they start doing this on a global scale to citizens of a country that haven't done anything themselves, I think that this is a big mistake. But what really gets me is, without even delving into why this war started, the media put out the narrative basically, and it's still being pushed by the far left media and even Fox News. Everybody's talking about, you know, Putin wants to take over all of the past Russian territories. They're talking about, oh, he's going to invade Poland. He's going to invade the NATO countries. Give it a rest. What scares me is how quickly everybody once again is just following the mainstream media narrative. And I'm not saying that I'm necessarily right about any of this. All right. I have my own opinion on it. But what I'm saying is that I don't see a lot of people out there, even now, what are we, 12, 13 days into this war? I don't see a lot of people still thinking for themselves. A lot of people that I talk to are still just echoing whatever the mainstream media says, whatever the talking points are. And it's just as much on our side too. If somebody sits there and listens to Fox News all day and I ask them about the war, they spit back the talking points to me. We just got lied to by the media for the last 5-6 years. We got lied to about Trump for 4 years. In fact, even before he ran. So you really could say 5 or 6 years now this has been going on. Now, I know the media has been lying forever, but I'm talking about the more recent multimedia push. And what I mean, you know, cable news combined with the internet, combined with the blogs, combined with everything else. The massive media push to push out one narrative that everybody reads, everybody listens to, and everybody accepts. That's been going on for the last, you know, 5 or 6 years. We were lied to about Trump before he even ran. And as he, you know, when he decided to run, all of the lies that were told about him, they said that they were going to impeach him before he even became president, right? They lied to us about the Russian collusion narrative. That, of course, turned out to be Hillary Clinton. Durham's coming after her and all her associates. We're going to see what happens with that. But all of that was a lie. We got lied to about the impeachments, right? We were lied to about the election. As soon as he got in, it was nothing but lies about, you know, Russia, 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 that whole thing. We got lied about his background. And then we got lied to about COVID from the very beginning. where it came from, how it spreads, how many people had it. We got lied to about the number of deaths. Then we got lied to about the vaccines, the efficacy, the side effects and the deaths of the vaccines. The entire friggin' thing was a lie. And now, of course, that the whole Russia thing started, all of a sudden COVID is gone, right? When was the last time you heard from Dr. Fauci? All of a sudden, it's over because they're polling at 28, 30% in the real polls, probably when they're looking at their, you know, their inside polls. They needed to cure us all of COVID. And so COVID is over. Now we're on to the whole Russia thing. So for years, we get lied to about COVID. We get lied to about the election and the entire election fraud. We had mountains and mountains of evidence that the election was stolen and it was manipulated and lied to the media. They didn't tell us the truth. They didn't want that information out. And my question is, after being lied to about everything for the past 5 years of our lives and beyond, why are so many of us so willing and anxious to just swallow everything that the mainstream media is telling us again about this war without even questioning it? Like I said in the last episode, this is not exactly one-sided, and I'm not saying that this gives Russia a pass to invade, but we are not innocent as Westerners in this as we would like to believe. When all of this fell apart, when the Soviet Union fell apart, when the Ukraine became more independent and everything, one of the things that we told Russia is that, you know, we're not going to expand NATO, we're not going to expand the EU, we're not going to push eastward onto Russia's border with NATO and the EU. And that is exactly what has been discussed and talked about for the past over decade, okay? Putin has complained about the labs for the bio labs for the last couple of years. He's complained about the ongoing conflicts between regular Ukraine, if you want to talk about it, and the Donetsk region, where the two separatist areas that Putin now controls, that wanted to be part of Russia. Been talking about NATO expansion and NATO talks, bringing in the Ukraine into NATO. And also to the EU. I mean, these are things that we said we weren't going to do, and it was constantly a threat to Russia. And, you know, when I talk to people, they say, well, what's so bad about that? You know, if the Ukraine is independent and they're not part of Russia anymore, aren't they free to choose their own destiny? If they want to join join NATO or the EU, shouldn't they have the right to do whatever they want? And the short answer to that is, yes, they can decide their own future, but they aren't deciding their own future, and that's where the issue comes up. The issue is that the Ukraine is not doing this independently. They're not making their own decisions. They're not independent. They rely on foreign governments and aid to be able to survive, right? They rely on your taxpayer dollars, other countries, and they are aligned fully with people who are anti-Russia. If they were going to make their own decisions, they should be able to take care of themselves. If they want to stand up against Russia and go back against these agreements, then do it on your own. They're not the ones who are making the decisions, okay? They owe their situation to people like Joe Biden, Barack Obama. I mean, look how Biden threatened to withhold that $1 billion in aid if they didn't call off the investigation of Hunter Biden. Remember that? You know, the whole quid pro quo video. We are the ones basically calling the shots. The EU are the ones calling the shots. The deep state, the people who are using the Ukraine to launder money, are calling the shots. Look at the video. We're going to talk a little bit more about her later, but the U.S. Undersecretary, who's right now involved in the biolabs. Years ago, she's caught talking about who she'd like to see and to be one of Ukraine's top officials. 2 weeks later, there they were. All right. We're handpicking Western puppets to run the Ukraine. Poroshenko was installed by the West as a puppet, right? So they could launder money. So was Zelensky. It's not Ukraine deciding their own fate and their own path forward, all right? They're being manipulated by the West for Western interests. There is the difference. So when people say, oh, well, why can't they join the EU and NATO? Well, if they did it on their own, maybe there would be an argument to be made. But, you know, if you look at it from Russia's point of view, they're being installed as an anti-Russia nation, and they're being manipulated and controlled by other people. And people say, well, yeah, but, you know, there was a pro-Russia government before installed by Putin. Yes, and I'm not saying that that's good either. And that just proves my point. The Ukraine is not really independent. They were manipulated by Russia, and now for the last two terms, they're being manipulated by us and controlled by us. If they ever get to the point where they are truly on their own, then yes, they should be able to make their own decisions. But if you look at this from Russia's point of view, this is basically NATO and the EU annexing another country right on their border. I mean, this push to have the Ukraine and the EU and NATO is a massive factor in the war, and the media acts like it's absolutely nothing. And if you look at the media, they're talking about this as, you know, there's going to be war forever. You know, this just isn't going to end. Russia is going to invade Poland. Look at the financial costs of all of this, okay? First of all, the Ukraine is not a rich country at all. It's one of the poorest I'm not even going to say Europe. They want you to say Europe now. They want you to say that the Ukraine is part of Europe. It is not. It never has been. It never should be. It's the same as Turkey. They are not European. It is not a European nation. Don't live in fantasy world, okay? If Russia were to take over the Ukraine, all of Ukraine, it would exact a very bad financial toll on Russia. I don't think that this is what they plan on doing. They want the two territories that broke away. They want Crimea. And I think that that's, for now, unless the financial situation changes, probably going to be it. The idea of Russia in this day and age invading Western Europe, you know, taking over Poland and Italy and Germany, and it just doesn't make any sense. First of all, we've already seen that Ukrainian and Western military technology is definitely a match for Russian technology and the Russian army. Now, is this a full-scale assault? No. I mean, you know, if this were the invasion that the mainstream media would have you believe, all of Russia's army would have invaded. This would have been them pounding them to dust, and it would have been over quickly. The power in the internet is still on in the Ukraine. They're not destroying everything in its path. This isn't a World War II style decimation type war. It is more exacting. And like I said, still terrible. Every single person that dies in this is a tragedy. I'm not trying to downplay that. But this does not look like Russia is coming in to take over, Romania and Poland and the Czech Republic again and everything. It's just not going to happen. They can't do it. If they got into a war with the NATO powers, it would bring in the United States. It would be World War III. It could go nuclear. How does that benefit anybody alive? How can any of these countries withstand it? You know, for Russia to do that would be suicide. Is Russia interested in committing suicide? I don't think so. Now, as far as terms, now everybody was saying again that, you know, Russia is just going to continue this until they take over the world again. Now, already, Russia has offered terms, and it has to do with what we already talked about. Now, I'm going to take this from the Gateway Pundit, okay? This is the demands from Putin. It says, Moscow is demanding that Ukraine cease military action, change its constitution to enshrine neutrality, acknowledge Crimea as Russian territory, and recognize the separatist republics of Donetsk and Lugansk as independent states. Now, what does it mean to enshrine neutrality? What Putin is basically asking for is that they change their constitution to say that they will never join NATO or the EU, which is what, in fact, we promised Russia in the first place. So if you look at the first of his three demands, that's something that wouldn't change. The second one, acknowledge Crimea as Russian territory. I don't think that's one that was going to cause too many problems, okay? Crimea, as far as I remember, wanted to be Russian. When the Russians came in and took it, the Ukraine responded by shutting off their water supply. It's obviously been a contentious thing, but it's probably one that Zelensky is going to relent to. The third one, is recognize the separatist republics. This is also one that I think he's going to wind up relenting on, because the Ukraine and these two separatist republics have been going at it with each other this entire time, shelling each other. There's been little skirmishes. Every time there's a peace deal brokered, one of them goes and breaks it. And it's obvious that these two republics are, they don't want to be part of the larger Ukraine. Now, if you look at the way that this is worded, Russia is not asking for Donetsk and Lugansk. And again, you have to take this with a grain of salt. They're not asking for it now. They might ask for it later. But for right now, they're not asking for these places to be recognized as Russia, like they are Crimea. Crimea is the one that they want as Russian territory. These two states, they want to be recognized as being independent. That's why I think that Zelensky might eventually have to relent on this and agree to Russia's terms and end the war. Because Russia is basically saying, look, you agree to these three things, the war is over, we stop immediately, we pull back, and it's over. As more and more things come out, like the biolabs, and I think you're going to see more information of Ukraine's ties to the deep state come out, they're going to, some of the luster, I think, is going to come off the Ukraine. And they've certainly won so far the battle of the media and the popularity battle. And I think in the next, if this thing drags on for the next couple of weeks, I think you're going to see more information come out that the Ukraine doesn't want to come out. And that might take a little luster off of the shine off of how they're perceived by the rest of the world. And he might relent. And also, despite all the media reports of the Ukraine fighting off Russia, yes, absolutely, they're doing better than anybody expected, and they have a lot of Western technology and everything else. But at the end of the day, Russia is taking over cities. They are advancing. Do you stop the war now, or do you keep letting them take more and more and more territory? Because there's always a danger, of course, once they dig in into more areas, terms might change. This might be the best offer that you get. Now, when the terms were first put out there by Putin, Zelensky basically said that he wasn't going to relent. He wasn't going to bow down to any of Russia's demands. And he just did an ABC News interview a couple of days ago. And it looks like he's starting to relent on some of this. It says, in another apparent nod aimed at placating Moscow, Zelensky said he is open to compromise on the status of two breakaway pro-Russian territories that President Vladimir Putin recognized as independent just before unleashing the invasion on February 24th. He says, I've cooled down regarding this question a long time ago after we understood that NATO is not prepared to accept Ukraine. This was an interview on Monday night. The alliance is afraid of controversial things and confrontation with Russia, the president added. So Zelensky is accepting the fact that the help that he's going to get from the West, the help that he's going to get from NATO is not going to be enough for him to win against Russia. So now, of course, he's looking at these terms of surrender or terms for ending the war with a brand new pair of eyes. So in my mind, I don't agree with the mainstream media that are pushing this whole Russia is coming for Europe narrative. I do think that this is going to probably end sooner than later. And if you look at these terms, Russia is not even asking that Zelensky be removed. That's not part of the deal. He can apparently, if you look at this, he can stay as president of the Ukraine. There's no regime change even taking place or being asked for. So let's see what happens with this. Again, the most disappointing thing for me is how, no matter what's happening right now, that nobody is even trying to think for themselves, or at least most people. You know what I'm talking. I mean, obviously people like you, if you're listening to shows like this, if you're listening to, other conservative, podcasts and pundits on the online and everything like that, you probably are. But for the great American public and the worldwide public, they are doing nothing but listening to a mainstream media who they know lied to them for the last several years. And now it's just like they're given a pass again. Okay, everything that you told us for the last several years was a lie, but we believe you. about Russia and the Ukraine. We believe the narrative. We got to hate Russia. We got to love the Ukraine like they're heroes. Nothing wrong with them, right? They're 100% correct, and Russia is 0% correct. That's so disappointing to me that there are so few people out there stepping back and at least saying to themselves, you know what? We've heard nothing but lies for so many years. Let me just step back from this situation. Let me do some independent thinking. Let me wait a little while, because we saw it with COVID. We saw it with the election. We saw it with the Russian narrative, that the story that comes out first is the BS propaganda. And then months down the road, the truth starts trickling in. That's all I'm saying. I'm going to step back from this situation, admit that I don't know everything, admit that there's probably a lot of things going on that I have no knowledge of whatsoever. I'm not going to be told it by the mainstream media. I'm not going to be told it by Russian propaganda. I'm not going to be told anything by Ukrainian propaganda. And I'm just going to sit back and I'm going to wait till the fog of war lifts, wait till this thing is over. And then I bet that the truth is going to trickle in. And months from now is when we're going to get the whole truth about this situation. Now, the one thing that was extremely interesting to me is that we heard rumors of bioweapons, biolabs in the Ukraine. And a lot of people in our media were doing things like putting maps of the Ukraine and saying these are where the biolabs are, and here are Putin's strikes. And if you overlay them, it's perfectly lines up. I think a lot of that was BS. But we have stories that you can find online of Putin complaining about, biological weapons research laboratories in the Ukraine funded and built by the West. He's been complaining about that for a couple of years. And what's funny about it is that when the rumors started to come out about this, of course, the mainstream media said it was a bunch of bunk. And then you got that one report where Russia says, oh, Director of Information and Press Department of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of the Russian Federation. That is a title. Maria Vladimir, I'm not going to do her middle name. So it's Maria Zakharova, right? Zakharova I can handle. I apologize to all the Russians out there, but I have trouble with your language and also the French. Can't do the pronunciations. So she came out and did a press conference a few days ago and said, we have found your biological weapons. Now, the funny thing is that you had this interview, was it yesterday or the day before, with Marco Rubio and Deputy Secretary of State Victoria Nuland. And she basically came out and admitted that, yes, the Ukraine has a bunch of these research labs, biological and chemical research labs all over the country, affiliated with the United States, with funding and everything. And Rubio almost fed her answers like, okay, these labs exist, but if we were to see some kind of an attack, if we were to see some kind of like a chemical attack or a biological weapons attack, wouldn't that fit the narrative that this would be a false flag by Russia, setting off these weapons in order to blame the West now that we found these labs? And she's like, oh yes, this is exactly what Russia would do. And what makes me laugh about this is here is a top American official, the Deputy Secretary of State, okay, this is right under Blinken, admitting that the labs are there, when first of all that they had said that they didn't exist, when the media said they didn't exist, and it was all conspiracy theory. Once again, another conspiracy theory, and now it turns out to be true. What happens after that? 24 hours later, and after Rubio already interviews the woman, and it goes out all over the news and all over the internet and everything, now all of a sudden, the Biden administration 24 hours later says, no, this is just a rumor. This is just propaganda. I'm going to take this article again from the Gateway Pundit because they deserve it. Headline, not so fast. Biden gang now says biological labs that they said were in the Ukraine yesterday don't exist. All right, so which is it? Are there biological research labs in the Ukraine or not? The Biden gang admitted to the existence of biolabs on Tuesday, but then changed their story on Wednesday. Yesterday, Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs Victoria Nuland admitted during testimony before a U.S. Senate committee the existence of biological research labs in the Ukraine. But then this afternoon, less than 24 hours later, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said that the reports of biolabs in the Ukraine were fake news propagated by Russia. She then said, and this is the scary part, this is the part that raises a little bit of a red flag for me, and I think it should you too. Psaki then said that we should be ready for Russia possibly using chemical or biological weapons in the Ukraine. This is also from the Daily Mail, which the Gateway Pundit is reporting on. The White House's warning on Wednesday that Russia's autocratic leader Vladimir Putin could use chemical or biological weapons in a massive escalation of his unprovoked and deadly attack on the Ukraine. Press Secretary Jen Psaki sharply criticized Moscow's claim that the U.S. is building weapons labs in the Ukraine as preposterous propaganda. Now, if it's preposterous propaganda, why did the Deputy Secretary of State go in front of a U.S. Senate committee talking to Marco Rubio and say that they existed? How in the world can they expect us to be this stupid? She denied that the U.S. government produces or owns any biological weapons and said it is in full compliance with the Chemical Weapons Convention and the Biological Weapon Convention. All right, well, if you want to take that at face value, she denied that the U.S. government produces or owns any biological weapons. Now, if they're being made in the Ukraine, however, and we helped build or built those labs, I guess, you know, that's kind of a gray area. But again, it's the Biden administration. She pointed out Russia's own track record of allegations of using chemical and biological weapons against its enemies, adding, "It's Russia that has long maintained a biological weapons program in violation of international law. Also, Russia has a track record of accusing the West of the very violations that Russia itself is perpetrating." And so the article ends, "So now the Biden gang tells us not to believe what the Biden gang told us to believe only yesterday. This is a clown show." That is absolutely right. If you're going to hide this, you have to hide it from the beginning. You can't come out and say, yes, everything exists, and then the next day come out and say, no, it doesn't exist. What is this, Roswell? It's absolutely ridiculous how stupid they think you are. You know what, though? Why wouldn't she think we're this stupid? After the election of 2020 and after the COVID narrative and all the media things that they told us, why wouldn't she think we're this dumb, right? She probably gets up there in front of the microphone, says stuff like this, and goes home and laughs. Sits around the dinner table with her husband or her family and just sits there and laughs at us because we're trained monkeys at this point. Now, it's funny, there's an article here about Obama's involvement, and this goes all the way back to the time that he was a senator. I'm going to read this to you because this isn't really widely in the news, and I just want you to have this little bit of a background on it. It's doesn't necessarily mean anything too sinister, but I just want you to see how long our relationship, let's call it, with the Ukraine goes back to. This is also from the Gateway Pundit. Says Obama was involved in the creation of a biolab handling especially dangerous pathogens in the Ukraine. Now, there's photos of this. I've actually seen him over in the Ukraine, so this does not seem like a made-up story or fake news or anything else. Natalie Winters at the National Pulse reported last night on Obama's connections to the labs reported in Ukraine. A deleted web article recovered by the National Pulse reveals that former President Barack Obama spearheaded an agreement leading to the construction of biolabs handling, quote, especially dangerous pathogens in the Ukraine. The news comes on the same day that the Biden regime, Victoria Nuland, told the U.S. Senate that the American government is concerned about biological research facilities falling into Russian hands as a result of the ongoing conflict in Eastern Europe. So again, back to Psaki's denial. We came out and said not only are the labs there, but we're afraid of Russia gaining control of these labs. And then the next day, the labs don't exist. I mean, really? Originally posted on June 18th, 2010, the article "Biolab Opens in Ukraine" details how Obama, while serving as an Illinois senator, helped negotiate a deal to build a level 3 biosafety lab in the Ukrainian city of Odessa. The article, which was also highlighted the work of former Senator Dick Lugar, was additionally included in issue number 818 of the United States Air Force Counterproliferation Center's Outreach Journal. Lugar said plans for the facility began in 2005 when he and then-Senator Barack Obama entered a partnership with Ukrainian officials. Lugar and Obama also helped coordinate efforts between the U.S. and Ukrainian researchers that year in an effort to study and help prevent avian flu, explained author Tina Redlup. Yesterday, in a testimony in front of the Senate, Biden official Victoria Nuland admitted to biological research labs being in Ukraine in response to questions from Florida Senator Marco Rubio. Today, a Russian spokesman admitted that Russia found U.S. biological weapons in Ukraine. This shocking news comes after reports a week ago stating that one reason that Russia invaded Ukraine was to take out facilities that were involved in biological warfare. Now, do we have absolute 100% stunning proof of all of this yet? Well, I would say that the admission of the fact that they were there and the fact that they were afraid of Russia taking control of these facilities is certainly admission that the facilities are there. So Psaki coming out and saying that they aren't there is a bunch of BS. Now, what was being produced there? Russia has a list. I didn't see anything on there about gain-of-function research. It doesn't look like the next Wuhan lab, but there certainly were agents on there that I wouldn't necessarily want on my border. And if this isn't a secret, why was it a secret, right? Again, right now, we don't know the full extent of it. All I do know is that my government was lying, your government was lying once again, and is trying to lie once again now by saying what we said yesterday is nothing but propaganda. Doesn't make any sense. Now, the other thing about this war, you want to talk about escalation. It seems that we are trying to escalate this more than Russia. And the reason, this is one of the things that I think is funny. Our Secretary of State, Tony Blinken, basically met with Poland, and he basically floated the idea of Poland sending over their fleet of MiG-29s, their jets, over to the Ukraine. Poland didn't like the idea, all right? Basically said they didn't want to get involved in the escalation. The next day, Blinken comes out and basically refutes Poland's rejection and basically says that he's in talks with them for this very deal to send over the jets. Okay, now I don't know if Blinken was trying to threaten Russia, make Russia concerned that there was going to be a new influx of weapons and he was trying to look dominant or whatever he was doing. But Poland called Blinken's bluff and basically said, all right, we immediately release all of our MiG-29s, and we are going to, if you want them, we'll send them over to Germany, to the Air Force base there, and the Americans can bring them over to the Ukraine. So what that basically did was, and what they asked for was a fleet of planes to replace them that have the same, the same capabilities and everything else. So what it basically does is it called his bluff, because what that does is it turns the escalation over to the United States. If Poland were to just send the jets over to the Ukraine directly, it would be Poland getting involved. By handing over the planes to the United States at their Air Force base, and making us do it, it's calling Blinken's bluff. It's basically saying, if you want to escalate this war, if you want to get NATO, if you want to get the United States involved in an all-out war with Russia, this is going to be on your hands, buddy, because we're not doing it. Here's our planes if you want them. You can replace our planes. Here's the planes, but we're going to send them over to your Air Force base in Germany. Now it's on you. And of course, we backed down. The Pentagon came in and said that this plan is not tenable, meaning our military came to Blinken and said, are you friggin' out of your mind? What are you doing? We're not going to take these planes from Poland and send them over to Ukraine. You want to get us involved in a massive war with Russia? You want to escalate this from 100 to 1,000? Are you crazy? So, every time you look at Blinken, every time he opens his mouth, It's like listening to a moron, and you look at his face every time he's on the TV. He looks petrified. He looks scared. There's no confidence in this guy whatsoever. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's in over his head. He knows he's being outthought and outmaneuvered, and he doesn't know what to do about it. Now, we talked about already the massive corruption going on in the Ukraine, with its ties to the United States, with its ties to Obama. I mentioned in the last podcast they were the largest donor to Hillary Clinton, largest donor, not donator. The quid pro quo video with Joe Biden, I mean, it goes on and on. They're money launderers, plain and simple. What's unbelievable is the, let's call it a care package now for the Ukraine. Nancy Pelosi comes and she says she wants $10 billion for the Ukraine. And you think, oh, wow, okay, well, once this goes to the Senate and, you know, the Republicans get a hold of this, they're going to knock this down from maybe $10 billion down to like $5 or $4 or something like that. You know, try to save us some money, try to be a little bit more realistic. No, Mitch McConnell took Pelosi's $10 billion for the Ukraine and he proposed $14 billion. Tacked on another $4 billion. Now, I think when they passed that omnibus bill last night in the House, it wound up being $13 billion. So I think $1 billion got shaved off of it. What was funny is that I think almost no money went to COVID. So COVID's over. Even in the eyes of the government now, it's just done. But $13 billion now, I think, is what they've slated to go to the Ukraine. This all has to pass the Senate now and everything. And of course, the Senate is probably going to pass this with no problem because we've got Pierre Delecto and we've got McConnell and we've got Lindsey Graham and we've got Lisa Murkowski and all these other traitors that are just going to, you know, take all of our money and distribute it around the world. Green projects, green energy, you know, environmental nonsense that's not going to be followed. All this money is just going to disappear. Now, speaking of money disappearing, $13 billion to the Ukraine, where do you think that money is going to wind up? How much of that money is going to be used, do you think, for the purpose that it's intended for? Or do you think that the majority of that money is somehow going to disappear? Pardon me if I don't trust our own government at this point. All right, so let's get off the whole Russia-Ukraine thing for now, and we'll talk about gas prices. I think we're in our fourth or fifth day of record gas prices. I think right now we were at we're in the 430s now. Every day it seems to go up anywhere between 10 and 15 cents. It's gone up something like 60 cents in the last week. Unbelievable increase in price. Now, of course, Biden is going to sit there and tell you that this all has to do with Russia. He had that famous line, there's not much that I can do. You know, it has to do with Russia. He kind of walked off the podium, shrugging his head. He's not answering questions about it. Isn't it funny that the last time that oil prices, gas prices were so high like this was under Obama and Biden? Isn't it odd that as soon as he came into office, the first thing that he started to do was shut down the pipelines and take away our rights to drill here? We were, under Trump, completely energy independent. We didn't need the Middle East. We didn't need Russia. We didn't need anybody else. And now with these prices starting to spiral out of control and the nation turning on him even more, of course, now he's going to sit there and try to come up with solutions. What's his solution? Well, he wanted to go to the Middle East and get them to release more oil, right? What do? They won't even take his calls. Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates won't even speak to Biden. That's the situation that we're in right now, if you can believe it. So what is he doing? Well, if he can't get oil from the Middle East, he's turning to Iran. Well, that's still the Middle East. But if you can't get it from our quote-unquote allies like this, like Saudi Arabia, he's turning to Iran, and he's turning to Venezuela. Here's the funny thing about that to me, okay? We are, of course, in the media demonizing Putin as if he is the worst criminal in the entire world, right? So we can't get oil from Russia anymore, even though the first 10 days of the war, we were still buying Russian oil until the media called Joe Biden out on it so badly and shamed him so much that he decided, well, now we're going to have to ban Russian oil. And then he gets up there and says, well, that's going to raise prices even more. So he turns to Venezuela, to Maduro. Now, if you look at what's going on in Venezuela, your average person in Venezuela has lost about 20 pounds from not having food. Human rights atrocities. The drug trade has shifted just from being in a South American issue like Colombia. Like everybody thinks, okay, Colombia produces most of the cocaine, and that's still true, yes. But the way that it gets to the United States now, a lot of it goes through Venezuela. I think it's, I want to say 25%. I want to say 25% of all cocaine in the world goes through Venezuela now, but I might be off on that number. It might actually be much higher than that. The point is that we are now turning to a man who has decimated his country, who seized power through a fraudulent election. So they've got that in common. I mean, Biden and Maduro, they both rose to the, you know, rose to power in the exact same fashion. And this guy has destroyed Venezuela, is a drug pusher, a drug trafficker. His people are starving. And this is now who we're easing tensions with so that we can start to buy their oil. Now, why can't we just use our own? Biden and the Democrats absolutely refuse to go back to Trump's energy independence policies. Now, I have a real problem with the idea of paying $6, $7, $8 for a gallon of gas. I'm sure you do too. If you want to listen to CNN, they say that Americans are totally all right with paying higher gas prices if it means sticking it to that bastard Vladimir Putin, right? Prices had almost, well, not quite doubled, but they had gone up about 80% before the war even started. A lot of places in the United States when Trump left office, gas was in the 180s, 190s. I think the national average was around 210. Before the war even started, we were up around 350, 360. Okay, now, you know, we're in 430, 440 and going up, and it's going, you know, straight up. Not even really in concert with the threat from the whole war. I mean, you know what happens. War breaks out. They say, oh my God, there's an oil crisis, and they go nuts with it, and they, of course, gouge you. There's really no reason for oil to be at the prices that they are, but that's the world that we live in. This is how they manipulate you. The point is, Biden and the Democrats say that there's nothing that we can do. There's everything that they can do. There's everything that they can do. They can go back to the same policy that Trump had, and we would be energy independent once again, and we wouldn't have to suffer this. But they don't care. Because what the narrative is now, and what it was back when Barack Obama was president, and he and Joe Biden did this the first time, is that when they have these gas price spikes, they tell you, well, the solution is not to do everything that we can to lower energy costs. The solution is we need to abandon fossil fuels and we need to bring in the Green New Deal. We need to run the world with renewable energy. The problem with that is, like Buttigieg, okay? Here's our transportation secretary comes out and says, well, if Americans don't want to pay so much money for gas, they should buy an electric car, which, by the way, is and has an average price of over 60 grand. Now, how many of you out there have the money to go out right now and buy a $60,000 car? Now, I don't know where you live. I don't know where all my audience is. I live right near New York City. I don't even see in this area that many places to charge your electric car in the first place. When I do see them, they're often filled with cars and there's a waiting line. I was at the... Where did I go one day? They had one of these charging stations in front of a grocery store, and this woman was so angry. Her and her husband, they were like screaming, like, what are we going to do now? Because somebody had already parked their car at the charging station and was going to be there for 2 hours charging their car. So they had to sit there and wait for 2 hours. Let's take Buttigieg's fantasy. If we were to everybody get an electric car, all right, you still need fossil fuels to make the electricity to charge your car. So you're still burning fossil fuels in the first place, okay? But then again, where are people going to charge their cars? Where is that technology? Where are those products? Wind farms don't generate enough electricity. Solar panels do not produce enough electricity. We are so far tied to fossil fuels. But what can you do if you are the Democrat Party and you're a globalist and you want to implement a lot of this? Well, what you could do first of all is you can start bringing in those penalties that you've always wanted to do. The carbon emission taxes, the carbon emissions penalties. So if a company, they get a credit system, this is what Al Gore and John Kerry wanted to do, okay? What they want to do is, say you're a company that, you know, you're a manufacturer or whatever, you get a certain amount of credits, pollution credits. You go over that, you're paying through the nose. The government would make a windfall of money off of this, and this is all that it does. This is all that they're interested in, because they know, they absolutely know that we are nowhere near having the technology to be able to produce clean energy and have that run the world. Fossil fuels is it. Right now, fossil fuels creates the electricity to run these electric cars. They don't save the environment. We're not going to save the environment anytime soon with any of this. So it's all a bunch of friggin' nonsense. But that's what they want to try to move you to, because then they can regulate more and more of your... They can regulate the companies, they can regulate the technologies, and they can give a bunch of money away. Look at all those companies, the energy companies. When Obama became president, he gave away tens of millions, hundreds of million dollars to all of these companies that had green energy companies that donated to his campaign. Okay. Oh, here's $50 million for you. Here's $10 million for you. Here's $20 million for you. And they went out of business. They took the money. The money got laundered back to the Democrat Party. They kept some. Few months later, they closed their doors. That's the same thing that they want to do again, all over again. To give you an idea how ridiculous the Democrat Party is right now with energy and how much they care that you are spending all of your money on gasoline and transportation, all right? I'm going to take this from the Gateway Pundit again. Democrat Rep. Hakeem Jeffries of New York on Tuesday was asked how House Democrats plan to deal with soaring gas prices. Now, this is right after Biden announced that the United States is going to ban Russian oil imports, and then he said that prices were going to go up. So they asked this guy, well, what are you guys going to do in the House to deal with this? He said, what is the thinking within your caucus about how to deal with the issue of high gas prices? He said, that issue hasn't come up. They're not even talking about it. Now, you want more insult to this? You want to feel even worse about your government? You want to understand the level to how much these people hate you? And by hate you, I mean by these people, I mean the Democrat Party. Here's a report. Democrats met with oil executives last year and pressured them to decrease output over climate change. Democrats are not trying to fix the problem of high gas prices. They're trying to transform the country to green energy. That's what we were just talking about. They're so obsessed with climate change that they even had a meeting with oil executives last year and pressured them to decrease output. Imagine how different things might be now if they had not done this. Despite reassurances from the White House that it is doing nothing to discourage oil companies from opening new drill sites, which is absolutely false, President Joe Biden's allies in Congress just months ago pressured oil executives to decrease outputs because of climate change, raising questions about the Democrat Party's strategy to lower prices for consumers. In late October, for example, the House Oversight and Reform Committee called in the CEOs of Exxon, BP, Shell, and Chevron to explain what steps they are taking to produce less oil and gas, alleging that the world can't wait any longer. At the time, gas prices were hovering around a 10-year high. The hearing has gained new relevance as a global gas shortage has pushed prices to an all-time high. Prices are rising even more due to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and no sign of falling after Biden's announcement that the United States will no longer accept Russian oil imports. Those facts have left Democrats scrambling for a solution before the November midterms, as Republicans demand that the White House encourage domestic oil drilling operations. Meanwhile, the price of gas just keeps going up. This is another reason I think you might see a swift end to the Ukraine war, because this is going, obviously this is pushing gas up. Going into the midterms, obviously they're going to try to take credit for COVID. They're going to say that we listened to the Democrat Party, we all got our injections, and we masked up, and because of this, Joe Biden defeated COVID. All right, that's going to be the narrative for COVID. And all of those Republicans out there who didn't want to wear a mask and spread false information and spread conspiracy theories, they're the ones that kept COVID going much, much longer than it needed to. And if it weren't for us, if it weren't for people like you and me, COVID would have been defeated the day that Biden took his presidency. But, you know, that's their narrative for COVID. For gas prices and for the economy, they're going to need to have some kind of relief. Now, so far, you know, Biden gets up there and he says, oh, like in his State of the Union, oh, I'm releasing 60 million or 60 billion gallons of crude oil and blah, blah, blah from the gas reserves. All right, that's fine. Except the problem is that if you take the number that he gave during his speech and you find out how much gas we use per day, he released about 3 days worth of gas. All right, wonderful. Fantastic. Oh, it does absolutely nothing. And boy, it sounds good when you're giving the speech, doesn't it? Like when you said you were going to shore up the border and you were going to, we're just going to buy American and all that. I mean, his speech was just so ridiculous. If they're going to at least bring prices back down a little bit before the midterms, this war in Russia is going to have to end. I think pretty soon you're going to see a lot of pressure on Zelensky from the West, from the EU, from the Biden administration. Take these terms, end this war, and then you're going to see prices come down 50% or something like that. But I would not be surprised, don't be surprised at all, if they keep prices fairly high for a long time so that they can go into the midterm saying, we need to be energy independent, and we're not going to do that the way that Trump did it. We're not going to be energy independent by drilling. We need to be energy independent by solar power and by wind. We need to get rid of fossil fuels. We need to save the planet. And you need to be part of that. You're so important out there as a Democrat. You need to save the world. And if you think I'm wrong, here's an article here. Biden economic advisor Brian Deese: the only viable path to energy independence is to reduce fossil fuel use to zero. That is how insane these people are. He said, Russia's war in Ukraine should motivate us to accelerate a transition to clean energy. That was Biden. The only viable path to energy independence for the American economy is to reduce the energy intensity of our economy overall and ultimately to reduce it to zero and get us in a position to where we are no longer reliant on fossil fuels at all, Deese said. God help us is the ending to the article from the Gateway Pundit. I would say that is a good way to end the article, and it's a good way to end the podcast. God help us all with these people in power. They think that they can get us down to zero fossil fuels. Now, do they really think that? No, but boy, are they going to tax you, and boy, do they want to fine you when they try to implement these plans. Now, are they going to be able to do it? No, they're going to fail at this because they're not living in reality. We'll be taking over the government shortly. All of this is eventually going to come to an end, but the battle just doesn't stop. The good news is these people, every time they open their mouth every day and with all the things that they're doing with the war and with the gas prices and with the economy, with inflation hitting a 40-year high, no, gas prices, 40-year high, inflation of a 40-year high, they're losing people. They're losing more people than you can imagine daily. I would not believe the polls that even have Joe Biden in the 30%, 30, 35, 40% of people do not think that Joe Biden is doing a good job, okay? 15, 20 do. There's your real number. That's where the panic is coming from. Their internal polling has them spooked, and now they're going to try to do everything. That's why COVID disappeared. They looked at their internal polling, and the next day, COVID was gone. All right, that's going to be it for today. I hope you guys have a really great weekend. I apologize for not being on here as often as I'd like. When I get on here, I'm trying to give you as much information as I can and talk about things that, you know, some people aren't maybe. Hopefully you like my perspective. And if you do like the podcast, please hit subscribe. And if you know other people that might like it as well, maybe pass it along to them and help us grow the show. Have a great weekend. Talk to you all again soon. Take care.